This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica stations. Even though immigration enforcement under President Obama was so severe that he earned the title Deporter-in-Chief, under Donald Trump, there is a definite uptick in raids by ICE agents with swift deportation of undocumented immigrants. Parents are being ripped away from their U.S. citizen children, leaving behind communities that are reeling from trauma and loss. In Tijuana, family members meet across the border fence, barely able to touch or see one another through the metal holes. Across the border, hundreds, perhaps thousands of newly deported immigrants are living in squalor with little support, some of them struggling with depression at being in a country they may barely know or remember. My guest is Erica Pinheiro. She is the former managing attorney at Carecen, which is one of the largest nonprofit immigration legal service providers in California. She's also a board member of Al Otro Lado, an organization where she will be starting to work full-time very soon as policy director. Welcome to the program, Erica.
Thank you.
I think it's important for us to remind ourselves that this is not a new phenomenon, right? We can't let the Obama presidency off the hook. Obviously, there was so much deportation under his presidency that he was named Deporter-in-Chief. But how is it different now? Or is it really that different now?
It is actually very different. Under President Obama, there were priorities set for deportation. In his 2014 executive action memo, he stated that parents of U.S. citizen children with no criminal records, those caring for disabled individuals, single parents, pregnant women, and other vulnerable populations would not be subject to deportation, or at least could ask for discretion from immigration.
And so was that actually how it played out?
Yes. In the vast majority of cases, if we had a person who was a parent or fit into any of those categories who was detained or even put into deportation proceedings, we were able to ask immigration to either close the case or issue a type of deferred action for the person so that they would not be deported. And those are the people that you're hearing about now who had their check-in appointments with immigration, who without fear would check in, let immigration know they were complying with the orders, who are now being detained and deported at those check-in appointments.
So basically you had a group of undocumented folks that were on the government's radar for various reasons. They might have been pulled over or caught up in an ICE raid, et cetera. But because of their circumstances, we're told you can check in once a year, and as long as you've stayed out of trouble, we'll let you stay in the country. Now, those same people, sometimes even in the process of checking in, are being taken away and deported?
That's correct. So President Trump, when he issued his executive orders, basically removed the priorities. Now there's no priority, so anyone can be subject to deportation. So, for example, I have a client who's an unaccompanied child for whom we'd asked for prosecutorial discretion, and it was in the process of being approved. At our last court date, the ICE attorney told me that they were no longer exercising discretion in these cases and that we had to move forward with his deportation case. And we're seeing this over and over again. Parents of U.S. citizens who are complying with ICE's orders, checking in, don't have criminal records, are detained at their check-in appointments and quickly deported.
Now, the fact that these are people who are trying to do the right thing, doing their ICE check-ins because they were asked to do, are now being deported, doesn't that immediately send the message that they shouldn't check in with ICE? If I'm undocumented, I don't want to be deported. I'm not going to check in with ICE at this point.
I think it goes even beyond that because we've seen a couple cases of people who are actually applying to legalize their status. So these are people who have U.S. citizens, spouses, children, or parents who've submitted applications to Immigration Service to legalize their status, to become permanent residents. And we've seen those people even arrested at their interviews, maybe because they have an outstanding deportation order from a long time ago, or maybe because they had a minor criminal history.
And so usually in the process of application, that would be set aside, right? That they might have had a deportation order because they're in the process of applying for a green card, but you're saying now they're being arrested at their interviews.
Correct. So just two quick points. If someone has a deportation order from a long time ago, that doesn't necessarily mean that they had the opportunity to access an immigration judge or submit an application for relief. In many cases, people enter the United States as children, were apprehended with a smuggler who received the notice of their hearing, and so the child never showed up. 20 years later, they marry a U.S. citizen and try to reopen the deportation order, try to get their green card through their spouse, and then they're detained at the interview. And under President Obama, these people were usually allowed to go forward with those interviews. The citizenship agency would make a determination, and then they would decide at that point whether the person would be referred to deportation proceedings. Now they're just being apprehended before they even have the chance to present their case.
So basically, anybody who is undocumented in the United States today is being told by the government, hide or we will remove you.
Yes. And this includes victims of crimes. We've seen reports of ICE stalking courthouses, picking up people who are criminal witnesses. And so even within the criminal justice system, we've seen a huge drop in Los Angeles, for example, a 25% drop of reports of sexual assaults from the Latino community and a 10% drop in reports of domestic violence. So I think the most vulnerable undocumented immigrants are really at increased risk now.
And of course, those dramatic drops don't mean that incidents of domestic violence or sexual assault have decreased. They're simply not being reported. There can only be that explanation for it.
Yeah, that's correct.
So let's talk about how ICE agents are approaching people. You mentioned that they're going to people's homes. There was a cover story in the LA Weekly last week, an extensive cover story that showcased, featured the story of one young father, Jose Mares, who it turned out was being stalked by ICE agents and didn't know it. They were watching his every move. They were in unmarked cars, and then they basically apprehended him early in the morning. By nightfall, he was in Tijuana. Is that a typical story?
Yes, especially for someone who's had prior contact with immigration and might have an outstanding removal order. In many cases, even if the person has not had prior contact with immigration, they are coerced into signing a voluntary departure or stipulated removal, which is a type of voluntary deportation. And so very, very quickly, they can end up in Tijuana without ever seeing a judge.
And this, let's talk a little bit about Jose's case. He has an 18-year-old daughter, and she didn't have any idea what happened to her father until after he was in custody and eventually able to make a phone call to her. And suddenly her entire life has been turned upside down, and her whole existence has been, you know, I just can't imagine what she would be going through. Does ICE have any sense of what is to happen to the children, U.S. citizen children of undocumented immigrants that they're deporting? Do they care? Do they make any allowances or account for what they're doing?
No, they don't. And, that's the whole reason why Obama had that priority program, is so that ICE could take those things into consideration. Now they're not even viewing evidence. For example, I had a DACA client who was detained a few weeks ago. I went over to where he was being detained. I tried to submit proof that he was married to a U.S. citizen, federal government employee, that he's a mentor for underprivileged youth. He started his own soccer league, really a model citizen. And the ICE supervisor didn't even want to take the packet. She didn't even want to look at the information and told me that there was no bond available for him. Ultimately, I was able to get him released from custody using other contacts within the agency. But I can imagine for most people who are unrepresented, ICE isn't even going to look at evidence that they have dependent family members here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So our organization is working with the Department of Children and Family Services, the school system, and other agencies that care for children, because if a parent is picked up suddenly, you could end up with a child who's just not picked up from school. So we're working with undocumented parents to make sure they have a plan in place and an emergency contact just in case that occurs.
So let's talk about representation. If you're a U.S. citizen and you are caught committing, or you're accused, I should say, or you're charged with a crime, although immigration violations are usually civil offenses, but if you're caught, if you're charged with a crime, if you can't afford a lawyer, one is appointed to you by the court. Is that same right afforded to undocumented immigrants when they are deported? Do they even get any guarantee of having a hearing in court?
No, they don't. And there is no public defender in the immigration court system. The only exception to that is for incompetent, detained, indigent immigrants. So those with schizophrenia or other mental health issues that would prevent them from representing themselves. But other than that, even children who are in removal proceedings, and there are thousands, about 5,000 or 6,000 unaccompanied children facing deportation here in Los Angeles, and a large portion of them, I think more than half, are not represented by counsel. You know, if they can't afford an attorney, they have to represent themselves before the immigration court. And immigration law is an incredibly complex area of the law. Even when training pro bono attorneys, it really takes a lot of mentorship to get someone through a case. So having a child represent themselves before an experienced government prosecutor is an anomaly in the U.S. Court system. There is no other court in the United States that requires that children represent themselves.
Right. And this was an issue even under President Obama. Let's talk about the border and what's happening on the other side of the border. There are reports of families that attempt to meet one another across the border fence in San Diego and Tijuana, and that attempt to, you know, keep their family bonds forged. How does that even work? Are they able to touch one another? Are they able to see one another?
So I think what you're referring to is Friendship Park, which is, so before there was like a gap in the fence, it's just these metal bars going up where families could touch each other, talk to each other, see each other. And then a few years ago, they put a wire mesh to prevent people from passing contraband. It makes it even difficult to see the person on the other side. Another recent change is that Before undocumented people were able to approach the border fence on the U.S. side, CBP wouldn't check documents. Now they are checking identification for people who want to visit family members who've been deported to the other side. So basically anyone who's undocumented in the United States, if they lose a family member to deportation, they really have no way to have any kind of physical contact, even if it's through that mesh fence.
So basically, if you are undocumented and your undocumented family member has been deported, now you can't even see them or touch them. You certainly can't go to visit them because then you would lose your status. What about on the other side of the fence? How are people coping? Does ICE or even the Mexican government have any government-funded programs in place for those people who are newly deported? In the case of Jose Maris that we talked about earlier, I understand the last time he had been in Mexico, he was only 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that we see very frequently. A lot of people came to the United States as children, barely remember Mexico, did their entire education in the United States, sometimes don't even speak Spanish well enough to get a job in Mexico. In terms of the services available on the other side, they're extremely limited to non-existent. There are no Mexican government-funded migrant shelters in Tijuana. There are about 30 funded by churches and other nonprofit groups. The Mexican government has been holding a series of meetings to see how they can respond to increased deportations. There is a small pilot program in Mexico City right now, but at the border, there really isn't anything substantial for Mexican citizens who are deported to their country. They're dropped off with a single piece of paper with their name on it. Many don't have Mexican identification. They haven't had education in Mexico. They're really just, I mean, it's being ripped away from everything you know and love and just dropped over on the other side of the wall. So my organization set up an office about a block away from where the deportees are dropped off. So at least we can help them get identity documents. We can help them register with the public health system in Mexico, which, by the way, does have universal health coverage. And we can help them connect to some job opportunities. Even English speakers can work at a call center or maybe some tourist destinations. But mentally, it really, even if we do all this the second the person crosses the border, mentally and emotionally, it's very difficult for people to adjust to the idea that they're not going to see their families ever again. And so Jose Mares is a good example. He's really had a hard time adjusting to the idea that Tijuana is going to be his new home, at least for the short term. So even just taking those steps to get identity documents, get a job, find a place to live, they're hard enough without support from the Mexican government, and even more difficult with that kind of mental trauma that the deportees are suffering from.
So newly deported people land up in Tijuana. They're undocumented in the U.S., and they end up in Tijuana undocumented. They have no documents.
Yeah, and it's not just undocumented people who are deported. Even those who are legally in the United States are subject to deportation. It could be for an arrest. It could be because they didn't renew their status correctly. There could be a lot of reasons. And then we also see people who never should have been deported, who were deported in violation of the law, but because there's such limited access to counsel, especially in detention facilities, there really isn't any recourse for these people. Yeah. We try as best as we can. We have volunteer attorneys come to Tijuana and try to help people return to the United States legally. But once you cross that border, once you leave the United States, your chances of coming back to the United States legally are greatly reduced. And so for a lot of people, it's just not possible.
So it's the immigration attorney's main goal to just keep that person in the U.S. basically while their case is being worked on.
Yes.
And of course, that's what probably why ICE deports people so fast. It's so swift that you could be picked up by ICE in the morning and be in Mexico before the end of the day, within 24 hours.
Yeah, and Trump has said that he wants to expand the use of something called expedited removal. So before, it only applied to people who had been in the United States for several weeks and were caught within 100 miles of the border. Now it can be anyone who's been in the United States, even up to a couple of years, who's caught anywhere in the United States. So these are the changes that he wants to make. There's also something called stipulated removal, which I mentioned before, which is where a person voluntarily agrees to be deported. Now, if you don't have an attorney explaining your rights to you, and you have an ICE agent who they frequently give misinformation to people. They tell them you'll just be detained, you don't have any way to stay in the United States legally. And so even people who could have stayed in the United States legally end up signing away their own rights because they're pressured into doing so. The ACLU actually litigated this issue a couple years ago in a case called Lopez Venegas, and it was because people within the Los Angeles jail system were being pressured to sign voluntary departures to go back to Mexico without being told that they had relief from removal. So they obtained a settlement that allowed some people to come back, but this practice continues, and that settlement was very limited. So I think people really need to know that they do have the right to see an immigration judge in the vast majority of cases, and that they should insist on doing so.
Hmm. And I mean, immigration law is so complicated. As you were saying, we're seeing stories of, you know, there's a story of neurosurgeons in Houston from India who did everything right, but because some agent at some border when they were returning to the U.S. Put something wrong on their passports, they were facing deportation within 24 hours, even though they were basically, you know, they had surgeries scheduled. You're hearing stories of U.S. citizens being detained by ICE wrongfully for 3 weeks. One person is suing Homeland Security because he was detained even though he was a U.S. citizen and wasn't told what was happening to him. You're also hearing about Trump supporters who voted for Donald Trump, who have loved ones, even perhaps spouses who are undocumented, and are facing deportation. This deportation aspect, the immigration enforcement aspect of the Trump agenda, do you see this as basically the harshest aspect of his presidency? It's such a young presidency, and he has wasted no time.
Yes, and I'm actually very frightened about the unchecked expansion of Customs and Border Protection. This is the largest federal law enforcement agency. It's bigger than every single other federal law enforcement agency combined.
We've seen, and it's slated for an increase in its budget.
Exactly, and they've actually lowered the hiring standards, and we're already seeing so many issues with abuse of discretion, especially at the border. As you mentioned, U.S. citizens and non-citizens alike are being harassed, detained, interrogated. We've seen abusive interrogation techniques. I filed a massive complaint against CBP in 2014 for physically and sexually assaulting child clients. As Americans, we cannot allow this agency to expand unchecked. This is a threat to our democracy. And if we let this agency expand because we think it's only going to affect undocumented immigrants, we're making a huge mistake. We're already seeing that it's affecting U.S. citizens. If we as Americans cannot leave and return to our own country freely, then we don't live in a free country.
Yeah. Some have characterized ICE agents as Trump's very own Gestapo. Well, Erica, so much more to talk about here. I'm sure we'll have you back on our program. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more about Al Otro Lado? And also, I understand that Desiree Mares, the 18-year-old daughter of Jose Mares, has a GoFundMe page as well. How can ordinary Americans support the work that you do?
Desiree's GoFundMe is linked to our Twitter account. It's alotrolado_org. People can also go to our website or our Facebook page. Our website is alotrolado.org. And we welcome any type of volunteer who would like to support our work in Tijuana and Los Angeles. And we also welcome remote volunteer opportunities for pro bono attorneys residing in other areas of the country.
Well, we'll post all those links on our website later today. Thank you so much, Erica.
Thank you.
My guest is Erica Pinheiro, former managing attorney at Caresen, which is one of the largest nonprofit immigration legal service providers in California. She's also a board member of Al Otro Lado, and she's actually going to be their policy director starting very soon. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.